So the regular BOLT meeting of October 14th, 2020 is now in session. I'm going to read the preface disclaimer type thing that we all have to read to start a meeting these days. Pursuant to Section 3 of Executive Order N-29-20, issued by Governor Newsom on March 17th, 2020, the October 14th, 2020 meeting of the Board of Library Trustees will be conducted exclusively through teleconference and Zoom video conference. Please be advised that pursuant to the executive order and the shelter-in-place order, and to ensure the health and safety of the public by limiting human contact that could spread the COVID-19 virus, there will not be a physical meeting location available. Those who wish to submit an email comment during the meeting to be read aloud during public comment, email BOLT, B-O-L-T, at cityofberkeley.info with the subject line, public comment item number. Let's see. Please be mindful that the teleconference will be recorded as any Board of Library Trustees meeting is recorded, and all other rules of procedure and decorum will apply for Board of Library Trustees meetings conducted by teleconference or video conference. And finally, this meeting will be conducted in accordance with the Brown Act, Government Code Section 54953. Any member of the public may attend this meeting, and questions regarding this matter may be addressed to E. Franklin, Administrative Secretary, 510-981-6102. The Board of Library Trustees may take action related to any subject listed on this agenda. All right. Is Amy Roth on yet? Yes? Good. Hi, Amy. So, Eve, let's do a roll call. Attendance. Okay.
John Soloski.
Present.
Diane Davenport.
Here.
Amy Roth. Sophie Hahn. Judy Hunt.
Here.
Thank you. Public comment on non-agenda items. I'm going to quickly check our list here. Any hands? I will wait 10 seconds. This is on non-agenda matters.
There's one person who wants to speak.
Yes. Lilaina Spindler. All right, let's.
Thank you.
Good you're evening. On as soon as we can get you on, and then we'll do the 3-minute timer.
Am I on?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. All right, I'm Lilana with Berkeley for Assessment Tax Equity. The libraries, and indeed some of your livelihoods, are supported by the generous residents of Berkeley. I come before you today because I want to make you aware that there are 11 harmed homeowners who have asked for a correction on their tax bills, which includes the library assessment. The city has yet to give one of them relief. You see, when the library asked voters to support their well-loved programs, the library told the voters they would charge tax based on the size of their dwelling unit. This is documented in BMC 7.56.030A. So a large home would pay a large tax assessment and a small home would pay a more manageable one. Along the same lines, a multi-unit property would pay more than a small duplex. Voters have trusted the city to correctly calculate these square footage taxes until now. Recently, a group of mostly elderly and minority homeowners discovered that they are in fact paying more for their dwelling than many multi-unit rental properties. Unfinished dirt floor, reduced height understories are taxed for some of these. For one, it is an inaccessible unfinished attic. However, dozens of unfinished understories and even true basements in the city are not charged tax. Similarly, dozens of usable attics also remain untaxed. Why should these 11 homeowners' burden be higher than is right? We ask for your help to recommend that the city correct these 11 harmed homeowners' tax bills to align with their dwelling size. If the library is worried about revenue losses associated with doing the right thing for the 11 harmed homeowners, you can capture escaped square footage assessments from the more than 800 properties we have documented on our website, berkeleytaxes.info. Please think about this inequitably treated group of citizens the next time you receive and spend your paycheck or stipend. It is upon their backs that you may do so. Thank you.
Thank you. And just for general information, Bolt members don't receive any stipend. This is a volunteer position. But thank you for the comments. Do we have anybody else who wishes to speak? I don't see anyone. And if I pass you over, you can always scream later. Comments from library unions. I don't see any union members here. Does anybody catch anything that I'm missing?
No, I don't see any.
Yeah. All right. And I don't see any hands up either. All right. So we're going to move on. Again, if I miss you, just give a shout out. Comments from Board of Library Trustees. I'm just going to call people in the order I see them on the screen. Judy Hunt.
Well, first I'd like to say welcome to Tess. I believe this is her first in-person video Zoom meeting with Bolt. So welcome aboard. It's good to see you as the director. Second, I wanted to commend staff and the foundation for the wonderful program that I've been sharing with folks, where you have the Berkeley Symphony Orchestra members and authors reading to music. It is a wonderful program. I've been sharing it with folks who thought it was so creative. It sparks interest, particularly for younger children. And I'm finding for older adults as well, it helps them focus. So I just think it was one of the most creative partnerships, and we should be very proud of that. And maybe after COVID has subsided, we can find a way to involve the Berkeley Symphony Orchestra folks again, because I just thought that that was so creative, and I just wanted to commend staff and the foundation and the Berkeley Symphony for that wonderful creative partnership.
Thank you, Judy. Sophie, I see you next.
I would also like to welcome Tess Meyer, and also always thank Elliot Warren and Eve Franklin for their work. I'm really sorry that we're launching with COVID, but I do feel, it does feel fresh nevertheless. And really excited about the next few years with this incredible team that we have, both at the Board of Library Trustees, our leadership team at the library, and all the staff, the amazing staff. So I think we're really, we're headed for more great things. Thank you.
Thank you, Sophie. Diane?
Thank you. Of course, I'd like to welcome Tess. I'm so delighted she's here. It's been a Seems like it's been a long 3-year process that we worked on getting ready for a hiring process, hiring and Zooming and COVID. And now we're here starting a new era. And it's very, very exciting to me and I'm sure to all of us. I'd sort of like to echo what Judy said in a little different way. I've started watching the children's story hours on Wednesday mornings because I'm with my grandchildren, for one thing. And I found myself just delighting in it again. And I remember times when I would just happen into the children's room when they were happening and the excitement of the kids. And even though I only have my 2 kids, they're still just as excited. And I love the fact that 2 librarians are working together, or 2 children's people are working together from different arenas. And I think it gives us a real spice. And I suspect more people are probably seeing story hours than probably have in some time. And I think it's just great. It's another marvelous thing that we're doing. And I thank Erica. I know she did a lot of work on staff training and whatnot. And it shows. It's really a professional, great program. Thank you.
Thank you, Diane. Amy Roth.
There I go. Yeah, you can
yes.
hear me? Okay,
yes.
Thanks. I also want to join the chorus in welcoming Tess. We've been waiting for you for a long time, it seems like, and we're glad you're here. And I just think I haven't watched the Children's Story Hour, but I also, with the grandchildren, I've been on the Berklee Symphony with a storyteller thing. It's just great. And I think the staff is really making lemonade out of lemons, and they're just doing a great job, and my hat's off to them. That's it.
Thank you, Amy. Yes, welcome, Tess. Look at all the staff we have here tonight. My goodness. We have a director and a deputy director. When's the last time that happened? My goodness.
We always had that because someone was doing 2 jobs.
all right, so we got a new director that we're all very excited about. Welcome, Tess. And I think I speak for the board. We really are looking forward to working with you and moving Berklee Public Library forward in the years ahead. I think you signed a 5-year agreement, didn't you? And I think actually my work is done, so I can resign anytime I want, right? No. Okay. Kidding aside, welcome. Elliot, thank you again. It's good to see you. I hope you can relax a little bit these days. And board members, it's good to see you all also. I guess we should move on to I did want to point out, thank you, Judy, for the comment about the children's reading and the music symphony readings. And I noticed that Marcus Simeon, shortstop for the Oakland A's, was one of the readers on one of these events. We may not have him too long. He's now a free agent. And if you know the A's history, good players tend to go elsewhere when they're free agents because the A's don't want to pay for people. But he's always been, the last couple of 3 years, he's been one of my favorite Oakland A's player. And I was like, Marcus Simeon, good for them for getting Marcus.
He is a golden bear, you know.
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. He went to school. That's right.
Yep.
Anyway, thank you, Judy. Thank you all for all your comments. And we should move on to the consent calendar. We have a number of minutes, September 2nd, September 14th. two from September 14th, open and closed. We have an authorization to open the Central Library in all branches 1 hour late to allow adequate time for all staff meetings. We have the regular meeting schedule for 2021, proposed schedule. We have holiday and early closing schedule for 2021. We have fiscal year 2020 annual gift reports. We also have lease of, public photocopier and printing system. These are all on consent, and there's a number of them, A through H. I'm gonna ask board members if anybody wants to pull anything or if anybody wants to discuss anything first. And if there's no comment there, then I'm gonna ask if somebody wants to move the consent calendar.
So moved. Second.
All right. Who was the first?
Amy,
and then Amy. Sophie.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right. So Eve, because we're in COVID and we're video conferencing, we have to do a roll call on this.
Okay. John Solowski.
Yes.
Diane Davenport. Amy Ross.
Yes.
Sophie Hahn.
Present. Yes. I'm sorry. Yes.
Judy Hahn.
Yes.
Yes. All right. Good. Thank you. So that was consent. And that's taken care of. And we move now to our one action item, fiscal year 2021 budget amendment and the fiscal year 2020 closing budget results. Is Dennis here? So are we punting this to Tess and Elliot? Who's going to answer questions if there are any? Does somebody want to start with Tess, Elliot? Does somebody want to start with any background here?
Elliot, I don't know if there was anything specifically that you thought was important to highlight. We did discuss a couple of anomalies with respect to this year, given that the pandemic began unexpectedly and sort of shifted some of our expenditures. So I think that there were a couple of things that Dennis in particular wanted to point out. Elliot, I don't know if there was something that you wanted to start with.
Please start it, and I'll fill in if there's anything that should be added.
I think that basically, we had a conversation about the fact that there were a number of areas where we were under-expended. One of those areas included printing because our contract with the current vendor did expire, and we basically didn't initiate a new contract immediately given that we were closed and we had an opportunity to evaluate which vendor to use. We also have, I think, incurred some savings just due to vacancies. So I think as many of you are aware, the city had a hiring freeze and that has impacted the library as well because some of the positions that we employ at the library are also positions that we rely on the city to collaborate with in terms of a hiring process. Because some of those classifications are not library specific and actually sort of apply throughout the city. So that's another area where we found some savings and we're currently evaluating how to move forward with those, given that there is a hiring freeze. And you will receive more information about that next month when we provide a more detailed report on that. There were obviously vendor contracts in terms of
public programming and things like that that were temporarily discontinued, although we are coming back online with some of those things. One of the things that Dennis wanted to reinforce is that there was a significant difference in terms of the first 3 months of the closure and our total expenditures as compared to the second quarter within the pandemic period when we started curbside and basically re-engaged with public service. So there were some differences in terms of total costs. And there were some staff in that initial period that were deployed to the emergency effort. I believe it was a total of 47 people. But since that time, of course, many more people have returned to work and are working on a different status now, or different pay status. So I think that one of the things that we'll be looking at in preparation for next year's budget is basically analyzing what the budget looked like once we began curbside service, because I think that our expenditures will need to be based more on that time period as opposed to the initial 3 month period when we were basically closed.
I would add just a couple things. One is related to the construction project that's currently occurring at Central Library. Most of those costs are actually being incurred after June, despite the fact that the work began earlier in the year, in late winter, early spring. But we've received significant bills that will impact our expenditures this year that ended up not impacting our expenditures. We've already started incurring those significant costs. So we'll see some of that $2.8 million that's moving over from last year's budget immediately already having been spent, some of that, not entirely. And then the other element that I think, there are two other little elements having to do with things that we did not spend as much money on. And three, you know, with closures, we weren't using as much energy, our utility costs went down, our phone costs went down. And like Tess said, those are no longer relevant savings because insofar as moving forward, we won't see those savings. The other thing that happened is that with COVID and the shelter at home orders, we saw a significant slowdown in receipt of materials from vendors as the supply chains were significantly curtailed. So many of our orders didn't come through until July. So that it was expressed as savings, but we actually are incurring those costs in fiscal year 2021.
Okay. There were also unforeseen expenditures, of course, with respect to things like PPE. In addition to things like bins, right, because there's this need to quarantine materials and that affects all of the different locations' workflows, as did the shift to curbside service. And so there was some need to actually make sure that we had adequate equipment, both to support ergonomics and also to support quarantining materials. And we do appreciate the support of the foundation in terms of helping provide some support for, I believe it was the technology that we needed to implement curbside, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Good, thank you. Thank you both. Board members with questions, just hold your questions for a moment, because I should ask if anyone in attendance wishes to comment on this item. I'm going to check. I don't see any hands. Anybody wish to speak? No, I don't see anything. Okay, so board members, any questions, comments? I don't see anything. Okay, quiet bunch.
I had my hand up, but I didn't do it in the chat box, sorry.
Yeah, you're not on my screen right now, so there's two, oh, I see.
Here, okay, I go, go, I got it.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you very much. For me, the page that's always the most interesting is this attachment 4, which is on page 63. I feel like that's like the big picture that we should really get our heads around. And I don't know if people are there.
Mm-hmm.
Page 63, attachment 4. This is basically, gives us a little bit of an overview. And I really want to thank Dennis for the way he revised this chart. I guess it was maybe 2 years ago. I just find it much more useful the way that it is put together right now. So in 2020, we closed out the year final. That's the third column from the left. Everything before that was our projections and our imagination, but that final column is where we ended at the end of 2020. And we had estimated about a $1.8 million positive balance at the end of the year, and we had $12 million. Is that correct? Am I reading that right?
No, I don't think that's exactly what it represents. The gross fund balance is cumulative.
Right. But yeah, that's how much we expected to have. Oh, I see. I'm sorry. The one before it is projected surplus or shortfall in the 1 year.
Yeah.
So we were expecting to have, we ended up with $1.8 million more money received than spent in 2020, right?
Yeah.
And thank you for that. Mm-hmm. And then the gross fund balance is basically that 1.8 got thrown into our gross fund balance. And that's how much money we have sitting in the bank, essentially.
Essentially.
On a piece of paper. And then $1.5 million of that is our reserves. So we like to imagine that's always staying there. And then, so we have $10 million in the bank that is not allocated. It's unallocated excess equity just sitting there, right? I just want to make sure I'm reading this right. So then fiscal year 2021, when we adopted it, we had projected that we would have less revenues than expenses. That's $642,000 less revenues than expenses. But we would have a gross fund balance of $11,385. We already know that that number is higher, even though we adopted a lower number. I think it's worth kind of running through these because this is really where we kind of see the big picture. I don't know if someone else wants to. So we adopted the 2021 budget. That was adopted a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, because the city does a 2-year budgeting process. So that adopted 2021 was adopted in 2019. Then it was revised when did we revise it? When was that FY 2021 revision? Was that the revision we did?
Sorry.
At the beginning of the year?
April.
Exactly.
Okay.
May.
Right. So this spring. And then what is your projected column? Based on actuals, you are projecting these numbers for 2021 now that we have the 2020 actuals?
Okay. Let me just see the difference between the projected and the revised.
Well, revised is always an estimate that we made last spring. And I'm wondering if projected maybe includes, it actually looks basically, there's some numbers that are different.
So the main difference in between the projected and the revised relates to that building infrastructure line. As my memory serves, we had a discussion related to the underestimation of costs, the non-reflection of the building facility costs in that line item, and this reflects a more realistic representation of what expenditures will be.
Okay, so that's the only change in the projected.
The most significant change. There are other accounts. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then the 2022, 2023, 2024, that's all basically just imaginary. There is no adopted budget for any of those years, but it's just Dennis giving us a little peek into the future of what it might look like in those 3 years, right?
Right, modeling based on estimates.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I just, looks like we're in good shape. I do feel like it would be good anytime we are looking at the budget. I think it's a really good idea for this chart for us to run through it. Because of all the charts, I personally find it to be the most informative and the best at giving us a big picture of where we are and where it looks like we're going. And we do show, as we go into 2022 to 2024, we are showing a large reduction in that uncommitted fund balance. And I assume that's mostly because we have some money sitting around that we expect to use on capital projects. And that money will be spent down, and that we would be looking at less money sitting in the bank when the money that's sitting there is used for the purpose that we expect to use it for.
I'm also assuming, and this may not be correct, but just based on conversations I've had with Dennis, that he's thinking about just the projection overall of revenue as compared to costs, particularly things like personnel, which basically just continue to increase, and that he's anticipating that the sort of ratio of revenue to overall costs is just going to decrease, thus affecting of the fund balance.
Right. So I think everything looks good. I think what we may want to do is the city finance department is just scrambling like crazy to kind of, we're kind of revising our sense of where the economy is, our homes turning over, are they turning over for more or less? Are people going to be asking to have their properties reassessed at a lower amount? They're doing a very, very deep dive on that. And hopefully the council will have some better projections in the spring. It was all so fresh. Basically, we only had about 3 months worth of knowledge, March, April, May, at the time that our finance staff was kind of trying to look into this abyss and figure out how deep it is, right? Every 3 to 6 months, we know more. And I do think it might be good for us to have a presentation at Bolt from the finance staff at the city about their assessment of, how solid the particular tax base that we tax is gonna be in the next few years. The city has a diversified stream of revenues. We have tons of different funds. We have, some of our money is sales tax, some of it is property tax. We are undiversified. 90 98 or 99% of our money comes from a single type of tax. And that makes us vulnerable to bigger swings in certain circumstances. And I do think that we should have a better handle on that so that our projections can be more realistic. And we may want to kind of hear from them every 6 months about what they think the outlook is for the library services tax based on their economic indicators. Right now, property values are holding, and there's actually a lot of turnover, and prices are not really down. But that could change. So I just wanted to flag that as something that we should really be tracking carefully. We are a single source for our revenues, and that's a big vulnerability. So that was my comment for today.
Thank you, Sophie. Yeah, I want to point out Elliot's comment about the underestimation or the uncertainty of the capital improvement costs is going forward. We're going to have to keep an eye on that. I'm not sure I entirely agree with your assessment, Sophie, about the single source being vulnerable. It's a pretty stable single source, but we can debate that down the line, and there's no real reason to do any workshop or presentation before we get a better handle on operations and where we are with COVID and what the library operations look like. Because I think until 2021, nothing's really going to significantly change, and it could be well into 2021 before anything significantly changes in terms of operation. We still have personnel costs, we still have overhead costs, we still have many costs, but from my point of view, revenues are pretty solid. And I'm not entirely concerned about that at this point. Now, things, of course, can change, and you're right about that, Sophie, and we need to keep an eye on that. Diane, I see your hand.
Yeah, I know that this was a year that the city was in heavy negotiations with all the unions. Have any of those negotiations been completed, and do we know where any of those costs are yet?
The terms of the contract did not change significantly.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
All right, other board members? Amy, that leaves Amy and Judy at this point, unless Diane has other comments or questions.
No. Mm-mm.
No?
No, I'm good.
Nobody? We're good?
John, if I could just make a clarification.
Sure.
Yeah, I didn't mean to say it. I don't want to be misinterpreted as having any information that our revenue stream is in peril at all. My point was that when you're not diversified, you are always vulnerable. Because if your one source of income happens to be the one that tanks, then you don't have anything to hedge against. So I just want to clarify that it wasn't that I think that our revenues are going to go down. On the contrary, I'm asking for us to have staff come and talk, finance staff talk to us about what they might project for this particular type of revenue stream, because I don't feel qualified to opine on that. My point was, when you're not diversified, you're vulnerable to a swing in your one area. I just wanted to clarify, because I don't want people to think that I know or think that there's some kind of a crisis ahead. I don't know that.
Good, thank you. Thank you for the clarification. And it may be maybe appropriate for me to bring up right now that I've, during the audit process, I talked to Jenny, the city auditor, and I talked to Elliot and others. I actually think the board should have a budget workshop every year, annually, and in depth, a little more in depth than what we've been getting in the past, so that we're kind of all on the same page and know what we're looking at and know what to look for. In my experience with budgets, it's really important to know what not to worry about and what to worry about. And I've been on boards where people spent endless hours and hours on what I considered really trivial items. And that's not productive for a board. It's really important to look at the big picture and to zero in on really key aspects of a budget. And I think Jenny and maybe the city can help us with that. Some kind of workshop, some kind of whatever. But I think that would be really good for the board on an annual basis, especially when we get new board members coming on, so that we're kind of all in the same place and on the same page. I think most of us now have been here a few years and we're more or less accustomed to the way our budgets are presented and what they look like right now. But as Sophie alluded to, things could possibly change. And also the board can change. So it's a good idea. I think it's a good idea to have a workshop annually for the board. I'm just throwing that out there for people to digest and think about. So unless there's any other comments about the action item, the budget, this is an action item. So I would entertain a motion.
Okay.
Diane?
John, I'll make the motion then. Therefore, be it resolved by the Board of Library Trustees of the City of Berkeley that the fiscal year 2021 expenditure budgets are amended based upon a recommended value of $25,077,606 in appropriated expenditures.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Amy? Okay, wonderful. A motion and a second. So Eve, we can do a roll call vote on that.
Okay, John Soloski.
Yes.
Diane Davenport.
Yes.
Amy Roth.
Yes.
Sophie Hahn.
Yes.
Judy Hunt.
Yes.
Thank you.
And thank you. That's the only action item. So we move to information reports. Director's report. Deputy Library Director report from Elliot.
Actually, Tess, would you like to?
Because it says Wait, Elliot. So...
Did it say Elliot? I thought we removed that.
I was kind of curious.
We will. So I would That's like to funny. Acknowledge the team effort here. And again, thank Elliot for providing support to the director's report this month. I'm just going to go ahead and share a few things with you. The first thing I wanted to mention is that the staff have worked really hard to update our website. And of course, they've had to do this over time, as you can imagine, because the situation has shifted very rapidly. And so in the beginning, a lot of what we were needing to do was focus on information relating to the pandemic and making sure that people understood what the status of services was. And we also had to hide or remove information that would have been misleading or confusing to people. But since things have evolved and we are offering now curbside service and we're offering so many online programs and we are beginning to explore other service directions, we wanted to make sure that the information on the website was organized in such a way that it was, that the important items were a lot more easily identified by people, including things like how to get a card, you know, particularly for people who are just starting to access materials now, or how to find information about online programs, right? Because the way that we have to represent all of that information shifted. I also want to acknowledge our adult services team because they did a really great job creating a voter information page, which I think is incredibly important right now. And we know that people are actually accessing that page. The next steps in the process is that the staff committee that is working on this will be running some focus groups so that we can enhance our children's and teen areas in particular, because we've been talking about how much more we could be doing to connect youth with materials right now, and the staff are really looking forward to coming up with some creative ways to do that. And the website is an important tool in supporting that. Wanted to touch briefly on our safe reopening planning, which of course is at the forefront of everybody's mind. One thing I wanted to share that's very exciting is we did some statistical analysis for our first quarter of this fiscal year, and our curbside circulation has been very high. We circled 216 physical items in these 3 months, and someone did the calculation that averages out to about 8 items per community member per year. So we're actually really reaching people with the service, and we're quite excited about that. Our committee that is working on safe reopening, as well as our JLMC team, have been involved in conversations about three important things. One is planning for the winter. How can we make curbside as safe and comfortable, both for staff and the public, given that the conditions will be changing? The other is, you know, we would really like to try to offer technology access somehow, because we know that that is a very important element of our service that some people are currently disconnected from. So we're doing outreach and we're in discussion about what we might provide. But one possible idea is that we would circulate laptops and hotspots or some such combination via curbside, and then provide some kind of remote tech support so that people who are in most need are able to access technology. We'll provide an update when we know precisely what that service model looks like. But again, we're engaging with staff and trying to identify the safest approach to doing this for people. The other thing that we've actually gotten some feedback on relates to people missing the browsing experience, right? They're not able to go into the buildings and see our beautiful collections. And so we've engaged staff in thinking about how they might provide something that relates to browsing in different ways. And it's been really fun to hear what people are coming up with. They're talking about, you know, using windows and displays differently. We're talking about using our website differently. So we're looking forward to developing those ideas. Wanted to just touch on the use of our electronic or our e-resources. As you probably anticipated, circulation of electronic resources such as OverDrive, our ebook collection, and Hoopla has been incredibly high. Looks like the first quarter we circled about 360,000 items, which is great. I also really wanted to acknowledge our fantastic youth librarians, because we really believe that it's a credit to the outreach that I think particularly the teen services librarians did to Berkeley Unified that has resulted in a pretty significant increase in use of this special portal that we created for Berkeley Unified students to access e-resources more easily. And we've seen double use, and I think that we can attribute it to the outreach that they did. I just want to mention briefly too that many staff at the Central Library are engaged in a robust project around our biographies. And as many of you probably know, biographies, because of the history of call number and Dewey, end up being in different places, sort of scattered. And so this project is all about making it easier for people who are looking for biographies to find them. And we're also broadening the collection and expanding it as well. And so it, as you can imagine, involves a lot of work and closures are good times to do projects like this because we have more access to the building and the collection. And so staff have been working very hard on every element of this. And eventually our goal is to make these biographies very easy to find. They'll be located in one place that's easily identifiable by the public. And I think we hope will lead to a better experience for them. We've started purchasing our culinary tools, which I'm very excited about. Although I keep joking. I'm like, keep me away from the pasta maker because that's going to be deadly, you know, not a good idea for me. So many of you already mentioned this, but our public programs online are fantastic. We're also very excited about this program that the foundation launched. It's been incredibly successful, and I just want to acknowledge Amy, who's been working really hard along with other staff to engage with patrons online. We're getting a tremendous response on social media about these programs. And I'm also personally really excited that we have a staff member participating and providing a story time as well, which will be great. We've done events online for Hispanic Heritage. It's also great to see our adult team stepping up and producing some online programs. So one example is they did a STEM workshop in partnership with UC Berkeley that related to, let's see if I'm gonna get this right, the Search for Extraterrestrials program at UC Berkeley, which I didn't know existed, but it was very popular, successful program. And things like resume workshops, I think that the team is working hard to amplify resources in the community that are important to people and making sure they know about other organizations' online workshops as well. And we are providing tech help, and this can be accessed mm-hmm. even with the phone. You know, it doesn't require use of technology to access, which I think is incredibly important because, again, this is an important service that we provide that we're not able to do in the same way. The other thing that I discovered in reading Elliot's work and his summary is that we're providing Zoom meetings for people who need help with ebooks, right, and downloading things. And mm-hmm. I think it's a really brilliant approach because, as we know, so much of it is visual and it can be quite frustrating if you're trying to explain to somebody over the phone mm-hmm. and there's that one button that they can't see. So we're really excited about the success of these programs, and I think you can definitely expect to see a more variety and innovation in this arena. And lastly, I want to acknowledge our IT department who really laid the groundwork for all these online programs. And Vlad, his last name is escaping me right now, but he's just been an amazing support to all these different staff who are recording and filming programs. So mm-hmm. we have a lot of support from people in every department who are helping to facilitate this. And that concludes my report.
Anything to add, Elliot? Okay, good. Yeah, I think it's great to give kudos to IT, the library IT, because I find them very effective, efficient, and they're, which is rare with IT, by the way, in my experience with organizations. IT has their own priority list. And if you're not on that list, you can wait weeks or months to get a response from in a lot of organizations. So I really appreciate the library IT folks. So the search for ETs, are they searching beyond Berkeley or is that just here in Berkeley, by the way? I'm teasing. Because you probably could find some here in Berkeley. I want to ask Elliot, because you were here last meeting and Tess was not as director. Diane asked me to ask you about vacancies and hiring, and I just want, can you just give a verbal feedback on that? And it's going to come to us in a future meeting.
Indeed. Bringing Tess on and Danielle back gives us the opportunity to spend
a
little time
exactly
orienting Tess about, and that's something that we've been working on for the last few weeks.
Okay, so I just wanted Diane to know I didn't forget. And
no.
So like next month, a report or something like that?
I think so. That's
our goal.
Great.
Is that the day after the election?
Oh,
my goodness. Well, all bets are off. If it doesn't go the way I want it to go, I'm all bets are off. Anyway.
Bring the wine, John.
I had lots of wine, maybe scotch at that point. all right. Any questions, comments from other board members about the report? Thank you, Tess. That was very thorough. Thank you. Anybody else? Okay. Amy Roth, you have a report for us.
I do. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
So Diane and Elliot and I are a committee that is focusing on onboarding of Tess and her upcoming evaluations. So we did meet on October 2nd, and here's the things that we discussed. We will be guided by I wanted to say one thing overall. I'm mentioning in this report, which is quite short, several documents. And if anybody has any trouble finding them in their computer files or whatever, I can guide you if you just ask. Okay, so the guiding document that we'll be working with is the goal setting and evaluation framework that Susan Hildreth provided us with. So that's what we'll be working with. And it has a timeline for what we should do at, 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, etc. In order to establish the mutual goal setting framework with Tess, the American Library Association, there's really no point in inventing the wheel. There are many existing evaluative examples out there. We're looking particularly at the American Library Association's document, and it's called Short Takes for Library Trustees. It's a good starting point. Elliot and Tess are going to look at that together and give us some feedback about what that document says. Tess suggested that we also include some work of Joan Garry, G-A-R-R-Y, a consultant that she has worked with in the past, and we are looking at some of her information, and we'll include it when we draft an evaluation form. We also have at our dispense the Berkeley Public Library annual goals for 2020. And of course they need to be updated, but they are there. And it shows us a way to organize what the goals should be for Tess's first year. And also, that's just goals, but in terms of competencies, in the recruitment brochure, there's really quite a nice little list of what competencies rose to the top when Susan interviewed staff and stakeholders. So we'll incorporate that. We're hoping that by now each of you has met individually with Tess. And so if there's anything you want to tell us, feel free. And we're looking ahead to month 3, which will be in January. that will be expecting Tess to prepare goals for the first 9 months of the year. And we'll do work in a closed session after the January BOLT meeting. And that's actually it for now, but we will report again next month. Okay, if anybody wants to ask any questions, feel free.
Thank you, Amy. Diane, did you want to add anything, or is that's
no,
it?
No, I think we've had a great discussion among ourselves with Elliot, and Elliot has carried things on to Tess, and Tess is already giving us feedback. And I think once we do find out more about Joan Gary and a couple of other things, that we'll be able to come back to you with a more exact example of evaluative review process that we'll use at that after the first 3 months, and maybe even a document that we'll try using the first time in terms of the evaluation. And, you know, we know this year is going to be a give and take process where we're all learning together, and we know that we want Tessa's input in this, and she wants our input, and this is going to be a conversation. So we're just hoping to carry this conversation along and make sure that we keep our eye on the prize, which is having just a successful first year, especially in terms of our communication process with each other. So that's our guiding principle.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you, Diane. This is I'm so glad that you guys picked this up and are running with it, because it is important. Thank you. Other board members, any questions? I don't see anybody waving hands or, okay. We can move on. Linda Sakamoto.
Hi.
Hi.
Good evening.
Welcome.
Thank you very much for this opportunity, everyone.
Yes.
And I just have one housekeeping detail. Sorry, Eve. Should I just do the share screen from my end here with the PowerPoint? Oops. Sorry, everyone. It's one of those details.
That'll work.
That'll work?
That should work.
Thank you. And I want to say welcome again to Tess. I know we've had the pleasure through Elsie. And I also want to say hi to Amy Roth. Hello.
Hi. We live on the same street.
And such a great support from the past. With thank you, thank you. I get excited when I'm on Zoom, everyone. And I know I'm fine with it. So thank you. Thank you to Eve. I will have a PowerPoint to share on the share screen. And it is an opportunity for our literacy program to share about our LSTA-funded Key to Community Voter Engagement Project. And we had the great opportunity to partner, of course, with California State Library, California Library Literacy Services, Common Knowledge, which is a nonprofit. So I will just begin by referring to the PowerPoint. And here I go, right, Eve? Okay. Oh my God. Okay, here we go. Let's see. Sorry, guys. Yes. Do you see it?
Not yet.
Yeah.
But may I just say something while you're preparing that?
Yes, of course.
Linda and I had been planning this, I think back in, right as COVID was hitting, we had hoped to have this on the agenda. So this has been long deferred.
And
we're lucky to be able to fit it in before the election.
And thank you so much. I know that you're you know, Evie, I'm so sorry. Do you see it yet?
No.
Here's what I'll do. Let's see. Sorry, everyone. We're going to try to go back in.
We have all in there.
Pardon me?
I'm going to make you a co-host to see if that makes a difference.
Okay. Oh, I bet that will.
Okay.
If that'll work.
I'm so sorry. We go through so many different Zoom versions. How about this? I'm going to try something right here. Here we go. Nope. I just see myself. Okay, are you on, Eve? Here I go. Do you see that?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Oh,
there it is.
Thank you. I have to tell you, I do this in so many versions. with so many people, including State Library. Thank you, Eve. Shout out to Common Knowledge, Susan Clark. And here I begin. Berkeley Reads, Key to Community and Voter Engagement Project. And this is a collaboration with our program. So I just wanted to show you, this is just a great visual. You see a glimpse of my camera phone photos. So that's the ESL club over there, voter ballot, and this is one of our learners. And I'll just bear with me, I'll do a really quick history. The Nonpartisan Key to Community Project is by the community, for the community. It started in California library literacy programs and serves new voters. And we also say the busy voters, people who need to learn how to get to the mail-in ballot and access online services. And you'll see our partners below, Library Literacy, Common Knowledge, and League of Women Voters. This will be really quick. I will not take credit for this program to be in collaboration with Key to Community. It began before me in 1994 with LSTA project. And it began with not doing this the normal way of just making people a voter. Why aren't you voting? And we have continued Key to Community into this is actually the second fiscal year. And I just wanted to kind of show you some of the touch points that we're talking about. It's using adult education best practices instead of the typical get out the vote. Why aren't you voting? This is how you vote. This is what you do. We really did surveys. We did a lot of input from a lot of collaborative partners. And this is just something we're very proud of. Every statewide election, Berkeley Reads learners help review the content and before the final drafts goes out for the Easy Voter Guide with Common Knowledge. We have focus groups right here. And this is the old West Branch is one of them. And we also have right here in the new Berkeley Reads office, you'll see pictures. Easy Voter Guide, you all know about. We've ordered hundreds here through the public library. They distribute to the branches. We have about 250 in our program office that we distribute out to all our collaborative partners out there in Spanish and in English. Something we're very proud of. The Berkeley Reads, here's where we begin. Our fiscal year began a couple of years ago, and we're in our second fiscal year where the State Library requested it to go into a new phase here with the November election. It's co-led statewide project. We call it a refresh. Summer and fall 2019, learner-led, right here, process hosted at the Berkeley Reads, input from all the California Library Literacy Survey coordinators. We began and had to grow the good team, which included our community member role, as well as being able to vote and puts elections in the context. Berkeley Reads and Common Knowledge led statewide trainings in Sacramento beginning last November, and we had the great opportunity to have appointments with State Librarian Greg Lucas, and he listened to us. This is really grassroots. These are our learners. One of them is our learner on staff, Alma, and another one is a volunteer learner on staff, and the other one is Rasonia from Oakland Public Library. Here we go. We're just showing you photos. Some of the photos I take, they get a little goofy looking, but this is also in the Berkeley Reads office in the computer lab, just community talk, just talking, getting ideas going, giving foundation to grassroots planning for the cares that are happening. So Berkeley-based planning shared with the State Library. They wanted to hear what our input was through our adult learners. And there's, you also see that was another meeting we had with him. And our updated mission, meaning we began for the last fiscal year planning for our communities to learn about the March primary. And you'll see as we evolved, our updated mission, helping people across California, we grew the mission because our learners said it's not just about staying in your lane of, you know, just a vote, let's grow the good. So we're learning together about community issues, we're voting, we're sharing examples of people involved in the communities. The photo right there is our learner on staff, Alma, who during one of those meetings in a library table and also here in our Berkeley Reads office, she said, why don't we grow the good? And so we got some funding and we created the banner, Grow the Good in Your Community. It's part of our brand for the Key to Community project. Another proud moment for the program and for the learners. This is one of the Berkeley adult learners. He registered to vote for the very first time. We helped him go online with his tutor, everything. He was just so proud and getting the mail-in ballot. This is the mother of a learner on staff. She received her citizenship in January and registered to vote after 60 years in the United States. Wow. And this is an example of an adult learner who directly assisted her mother in navigating the process, because it's challenging and obviously it was hard. And English was also some struggles in there. Just a lot of societal challenges, but it was a really wonderful moment. This next slide is very funny to me. And I pointed this out to also Elliot. I learned the word nimble. To be nimble is if we're staying in the linear track, that's fine to be methodical, but we have to, things happen. So we had March input before the shutdown, but then the challenges of COVID and phase openings came. And we had to take our March input and the challenges of COVID, the shutdowns on March 17th, we had to adapt to virtual environment. And this is what shaped us now to update, I say, the Key to Community Voter Engagement Project deliverables for the November 3rd election. So this was our question. We always said to all of ourselves on the team, how do we keep progress moving forward during the pandemic? And obviously so many challenges with remote connection, a whole new world transitioning. But we know we needed more learner-designed insights to be responsive to changing conditions. And that's where we entered the Zoom world, right? Including me. But I do want to show you quickly, this is what used to happen in person up until February. And this is the template. This is the template, the real life template. Although we just had to transition into the Zoom world. These are some of our learners. After the statewide training in November, in January and February, Berkeley Reads Learner Leaders conducted 6 voter information workshops at local senior center, with their own library ESL conversation club, with a church, and a Head Start parents meeting. And we had planned to keep going out further, however, the shutdowns came in place. Love this photo. I have my cell phone. This was a voter information workshop at the South Senior Center. And one of our proud volunteers who led the workshop. This is our learner on staff. When we presented with the Partnership of Adult Services and ESL Conversation Club at Central, we had voter information. And that was our theme, our PowerPoint theme with the census. And we had different tables, as we always do, rotating into breakout groups. And the table for specific voter information was led by our learner on staff and part of the Key to Community team, Alma. That was a great moment there. And this is the deliverable. It's going to be on the websites everywhere. This was the first one. This was getting in ready. We had a voting participation toolkit, how to vote, when to vote, resources. And the second part of that was what's on your ballot, which happened closer to March. Let's see, helping people get ready to vote in California's March 3rd, 2020 primary election. We were set with lots of print copies of things. We were so proud our learners wanted, what you see in the right-hand corner is the Key to Community Voter Engagement Vote, Berkeley Reads. We had all the little swag going, and this was going to be part of the dissemination of swag for a good cause, grow the good. Just another photo, that's a screenshot. One of our tutors, one of our project leads right there, a learner, a couple of learners, just getting to talk about issues, talking about your community. And that's the reason to vote. It's not just, hey, vote, you have to vote. It's also about caring for your community. This is your forum to do this, to vote. This is one of the shots of our website for Grow the Good in Your Community, which is actually under the heading of Key to Community. Excuse me, I'm here at the library. I told everybody to wait for me and the staff, wait. Grow the Good in Your Community. This is real life action, everyone. One of our sections is grassroots leaders develop innovative engagement programs. Learners with the state librarian. Here we are, go spreading the project in the community, any type of project. I mean, you go through Berkeley Public Library, you go through your library, through the library's websites, programming, newsletter, social media, yay, Amy, email lists, And now, since we don't have in-person, curbside, though, is our way of doing distribution and passing out an easy voter guide or meeting our learners, meeting our tutors, meeting community partners. Hi, thank you, Boomy. That's Boomy. Hi, board meeting. Thank you so much. I'll be there. And with our Berkeley Reads collaborative partners, just some examples. The Berkeley Bills Readers Outreach Sites, Head Start, the Berkeley Unified School District Early Childhood Education Centers, Bahia, Centro Vida. We have so many wonderful sites that we work with out there in the community. Women's Daytime Drop-In Center. We had Black Infant Health. Many sites that need our resources. The Berkeley Adult School, right? Right on. The Senior Centers. Another example is also organizations and programs that support our underserved, like Newbridge Residential Assistance Program and Options. And here we go. Just another screenshot, learners out in the community. That's a typical Zoom meeting. We've got all this going on. That's just one of those. It's just so funny. Over here, we had at the State Library in Sacramento, we had a workshop over there, and our two learners, Alma and Faye, they were doing sign language. They wanted to show one of the language that they use in communication to the statewide coordinators who are coming into that workshop. And that was in person back then. Learner-led at Berkeley Reads, examples. The New Resume Project was also another grant-funded, I think it was seeded by Bayless a couple years ago, which will also be rejuvenating again, along with the support of the State Library. Just examples, Our Time, Community Talk, Family Class, with a volunteer tutor and learners being able to come in and out when they can, and with not a strict linear agenda and syllabus of mandatory like attendance. Monthly learner network meetings is what we're doing now. We started this back in May, every month with the learners within our internal network and now with statewide learners. We're trying to teach them how to communicate through Zoom. Our learners, especially at Berkeley Reads, have been facilitators with the California Library Literacy Service Adult Learner Leadership Trainings. Our learners have participated in library programs. Erica, wonderful Erica, always asks for Alma for Family Place. She is able to lead one of the little groups right there in the ESL Conversation Club, of course. And ta-da, here we all are in a group way back in November when we were in person at the State Library, but that was also at the museum over there. Visit us at keytocommunity.org and on YouTube, there's links. We don't want to show off too much. And there's also, we have our information also posted on the California Library Literacy Services, California State Library website. And that's it in a nutshell. Thank you so much, everyone on the board, Tess, Elliot, for all the support, helping me learn verbiage of the library world. And she knows I so sincerely mean that. And anyway, this is a wonderful community that we work with internally, externally, and the relationships we all have in order to support this community. So thank you very much. I appreciate it. And I think I have to run out.
Thanks, Linda.
Thank you, Evie. Thank you, Alicia.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you very much, John. Would you all be okay if I just quickly dart out? Because they're hanging outside the door waving at me.
Yeah. I was going to say, you might want to cut down on your coffee intake a little bit.
I knew I had to do this. No coffee. I knew I had to do that. Yes. 1 minute.
All right. So,
great.
That was really, really exciting.
Thank you, John.
I have a really good friend, a coworker for many years, Filipina, who became a citizen about a year ago. And just the other day, she knocked on the door. I came out with my mask on, and she said, I've been hearing about the voter drop boxes, or some of them are fake. How do I know where to vote? And I said, there's one in front of Civ. So she's voting, and it made me so happy that she's voting. After many years of living in the States, getting her citizenship, for the first time she's voting. It was really kind of gratifying for me.
Yes, and the ballot boxes that the Berkeley Public Library branches have is excellent with the city of Berkeley.
Yeah, and there's one in front of City Hall too, yes, on Milvia, right in front of City Hall. All right. Thank you, Linda. That was really, really nice.
I will now depart. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Here we are. All right.
Anybody else feel like their hair is blowing back?
A little bit. Yes.
Linda and I are friends. It's okay.
Yeah. I know Linda from way back. Yeah. Okay, guys. Any other comments, or what do we have for future agenda items, or anything on this one? That was really exciting, actually.
That was great.
Diane.
Can we have a new sort of update on where we are in terms of the library opening and city processes and whatnot? I know sort of where we were the last, before we were calling staff back and whatnot, but we're, at least I'm constantly getting asked as I'm out and about, you know, when will the library open? And I like to be able to say, oh, we're following the health guidelines, we're working with the city. And if there's any update about that, I just like to know it. So just an update for us.
Yeah, that would be helpful, actually. And I get questions all the time from friends and people I bump into. But Berkeley side called me the other day and said, we heard the libraries are opening up. And it's like, okay, slow down, folks. Slow down. You know. But it would be good to have a report, a public report, so that, you know.
Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Are we good?
We're good.
I think we're good.
We don't need a motion to adjourn.
Nah,
we can just adjourn.
Yeah.
Thank you all. Good meeting.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you, Tess. Thank you, Elliot. Thank you, Eve.
Good night.
Thank you all.
You bet.
Take care.
Good night.
Stay safe.
Good night.